Well, good day, football fans, and welcome to the sport.ca, or even Sportsnet, whatever you want to call it. It's the Soccer Central podcast. James Sharman here alongside John Molinaro as we see the trickle-down effect in our fandom from the week that was in the football world and FIFA shenanigans, J-Mo. Thankfully, they were overshadowed over the weekend with some great moments. We had, of course, the FA Cup final. We had the Copa del Rey final. We had the German Cup final. Wolfsburg, Barcelona and Arsenal, happy campers, weren't thinking about Sepp on Saturday, were they?
I wouldn't think so, no. Good for them.
Well, we'll touch on some Sepp later in today's show, but mainly today it's going to be about that little match happening this Saturday, June the 6th on Sportsnet 1. The Champions League final, yes, Barcelona against Juventus. We'll hear from Adam Digby later in today's show regarding Juventus. But to start with, it's off to Spain, Madrid actually. Dermot Corrigan joins us, who was in Barcelona on the weekend, watching Barcelona get two-thirds of the treble. Dermot, welcome back to the show.
Hey, James. Hey, John. How's it going, guys?
Great, thanks. So let's talk about this Barcelona team. It's going to be a great match on Saturday, both teams going for their respective trebles. And you're always going to compare this Barcelona or any Barcelona with that Barca of, I guess, 3 years ago, around there. What's the press talking about this week, Dermot? Are they nosing ahead of that great team? Are they on par, or is it too early?
I think it's maybe a little early to go that they're quite up at the way that the Guardiola team played back in 2009 or 2011, especially the 2011 team when they just seemed to hold the ball forever and nobody could get it off them. A lot of the talk's been since the game has been about Messi and about the amazing goal that he scored, and he just took everybody. Just took the breath away with the goal. It was just a fantastic moment. And they're not really getting into it as much about Luis Enrique and tactics and stuff like that. It's been so much just about Messi over the last couple of days.
It's interesting you talk about Messi because you were in the Camp Nou for the game, the Copa del Rey final against Athletic Bilbao. I've watched the goal repeatedly since then. I mean, pretty sensational. I can only imagine what the reaction was like in the Camp Nou when that happened. Maybe you can just describe things for us.
It was a bit of a stunned silence. Like I personally just put my hands on my head and just started laughing, like cackling like a crazy person, I think. Because the atmosphere was amazing inside the stadium, right from half an hour before kickoff or an hour before kickoff with the Athletic Bilbao fans and the Barca fans and everybody. The noise was just incredible. Then the game started and Athletic were doing okay. And they were really trying to wind up Messi a little bit, or trying to just niggle at him a bit with a few little fouls and jersey pulls and things like that. And you could see Messi wasn't enjoying himself. He tried a few things and they hadn't come off. And then, you know, he just said, look, take this. Like, if you want to try and annoy me, then this is what I'm going to do to you. And from where we were in the stand was kind of near the sideline where he starts off on the run. And then he just keeps going and going and going. And when the ball hit the net, there was a little bit of a gasp of silence, or at least in my head anyway, there was a moment of silence, and then suddenly the fight just erupted. And from then, you know, it was the Messi final, and Barca were always going to win.
You know, it seems like lazy, you know, broadcasting to talk about Messi once again, but we have no choice, obviously. And entering the Juventus match this weekend, he will be the big reason for most headlines, I'm sure. Is he back to his very, very best? I mean, that goal, you're right. I mean, it was something very special. We've been seeing him doing it all year long, and despite a so-so start to this past campaign, in 2015 in particular, he has been just superb. It's been staggering. Is he back to his very, very best that we saw under Guardiola?
Yeah, I think he is. Like, it's really difficult to compare, and you know, you try to think back to what it was like then and compare it to something that just happened last weekend. But the influence that he has on games is just amazing. It was similar enough in the Man City game at the Camp Nou, at East Lands as well, but the one I was at the Camp Nou, and another couple of games, like a game against Valencia when Barcelona weren't playing so well at the start, and he suddenly just takes control of a game by the scruff of his neck, just by sheer force of personality. He drags Barcelona with him. You know, it's a weird one because there's so many great players, and you've got like Iniesta and Pique and Mascherano and Suarez and everybody, but he has as one individual, has such an influence on the game. Everything seems to go through him. Even the opposition are kind of looking at him, wondering what he's going to do next, and are in despair when he does something like he did the other day. And I think I've never seen a player just be able to to be so far above the rest of the players and have such an impact on a game, as if he's just kind of controlling it all himself.
Obviously, Messi, an influential figure for Barcelona, as is Neymar and Luis Suarez. I wonder, though, Dermot, for your money, who's been a bit of an unheralded hero for this Barca side this year? I mean, personally, I've been quite impressed with Rakitic. I wonder if I'm just interested to hear your take on who's kind of flown on a little bit under the radar for the Barca, but who's been influential.
Yeah, Rakitic went into my head just as you asked the question. I think Piqué and Mascherano and Dani Alves have been really good. But what Rakitic does is hard to pick up on, I guess, when you're watching the game and you're following the ball and you're watching Messi and Suarez or whatever. But the energy that he has and the athleticism and the ability to just run for all of the game, you know, he's always on the move, whether it goes back to the edge of his own box to win a header or to pick up a loose ball there. And then next thing, he's driving forward and it's him who's getting on the end of things at the other end. You saw when he scored that goal against Man City in the Champions League quarter-final second leg at the Camp Nou, when, you know, he was his counter-attack and Messi put him through when he scored the goal. But I think he just gets through so much work, because Iniesta's doing really well. He's back playing, you know, really good football and gliding away from people and playing passes, but he's not covering as much ground, or he's just physically, he's not the same type of player as Rakitic is. And I think if you take Rakitic out and you were to put somebody like Xavi into the team as well, Xavi would be great, but the team would become a little bit more broken. There'd be a little bit more space between the front three and the defence, and it would be easier to get at Barca. And because Rakitic is there, he just gels them together really well. It's hard to notice and kind of surmising, because it happens when he's there, as opposed to something you can pick out and see while it's happening. But I think without him, they wouldn't be as good a team.
You mentioned Xavi there. Obviously, this is going to be his last game for Barcelona before he goes off to the Middle East. Obviously, a fabulous career with Barcelona. A bit of a diminished role this season, though. Maybe you can just sort of put into perspective his career for the Catalans and what he's meant to the Blaugrana.
Yeah, well, he really means everything to them and to the team and to the fans. You see when he comes on, everybody gives him a lift. And it's just been so nice the last couple of weeks to see it, because I think he is he's the best Spanish player of all time, and he was a guy maybe in that Guardiola team back at the start. He was just as important as Messi maybe in the team, whereas now there's nobody on Messi's level. And it was great as well when Luis Enrique was talking after the game on Saturday in the press room. He was asked about Xavi, and he said that it was great that he had stayed on another year, because I think Xavi was pretty close. He said himself that when he came home from the World Cup, he was thinking, okay, that's it, I'm done with Barcelona, but he changed his mind and decided to stay. And had he left last year, it just would have been on such a downer, you know, after the World Cup, after them not winning a trophy at all. And Luis Enrique said that this year Xavi's going to leave, as he deserves, through the big gate, he said, as kind of a bullfighting reference he threw in. But people have been able to respond to Xavi and be able to give him the send-off that he deserves over the last couple of weeks. Because it was the Copa del Rey was the first trophy that he ever lifted himself on his own, because he would have been the second captain before, behind Puyol or behind other people, whereas now he was the main guy. He got to lift it with Iniesta. And, well, there's a good chance he'll be back again for his final ever send-off as a player anyway at the Camp Nou. Might be showing them the Champions League trophy in a week's time or so.
Luis Enrique, there's a polarizing figure for the first half of the season, and then he obviously got it together, and he seems to be a popular figure there now, and you can't doubt the results. But, you know, I've read some articles, people saying that perhaps he's not guaranteed to return next year. What are you hearing, Dermot? I mean, is he entrenched as that manager for next season?
It's very much up in the air, and it's an interesting one to be following for the last while, because he's been, every week or every press conference, somebody comes up and asks him, you know, can you guarantee you'll be here next season? And he always just backs away and says, look, I'm just concentrating on the game at the weekend. At the end of the season, we'll look at what's going to happen, and I don't want to talk about next year. And that just leaves everybody trying to guess at why he won't say it or what he means. There is the presidential election coming up in the summer, and maybe he doesn't want to hitch himself too closely to the current president, in case maybe there's a change in the top of affairs. A couple of little hints have been when he's talked about Zubizarreta, who's his good friend, a former teammate with Barca and with Spain, and who was fired by Bartomeu after a bit of a falling out in January, at the time when it seemed everything was falling apart at Barcelona. He's been very clear to give Zubizarreta a lot of credit, and to say that even at the time he he came out and said he wasn't happy with how Zubizarreta had been treated, how it had gone in, and whether he feels loyalty to Zubizarreta, and that loyalty would mean that he wouldn't continue under Bartomeu, getting into kind of supposition at this stage. But it's definitely true that he won't say, he won't even say as much as I hope I'm there next season, or all going well, I'll be there next season. He just flat out refuses to discuss it, which leaves us to jump in with speculation then.
Spanish forward Alvaro Morata is a very interesting story for me, Dermot. Here's a guy who was deemed surplus to requirements by Real Madrid, sold, I wouldn't say for a pittance, but pretty reasonably to Juventus, and he's been a key figure for the Bianconeri, both in Serie A and in Europe. I'm curious as to what's sort of been the reaction in the Spanish press towards this. Has there been any sort of questioning of, you know, why would Real sort of sell a player who's done so well at Juventus this season?
I think 12 months ago when he left for Madrid, nobody was too pushed about it. The press reaction was more that to get 20 million euros or so for a player was pretty good going, because he was well behind, in the pecking order at Madrid, he was well behind. He hadn't played very much towards the end of the year. Jesse Rodriguez had come in and was a much better player. Morata used to come on and play the last 10 minutes of games and maybe score when the team were already 4-0 up. But he wasn't a guy who the fans really had much expectations of. Then when he came back, he was pretty well lauded when he came back and scored against Madrid in the Champions League semi-finals. He's a popular guy with the media here because he's a very likable character. He's a well-spoken young guy, and he always does a lot of media work. He's always happy to stop and talk to people on the radio, or he's been in Marca and AS a good bit throughout the season. People are happy for him. I don't think many people really think that if he came back to Madrid that he would oust Benzema from the team, or would see him as, he's still not really seen as likely to be a really top class, like the centre forward for Madrid for the future. They were impressed with how well he did against Madrid in the Champions League games, but I still think people are not, some people anyway, don't see him as quite the top striker that maybe other people do.
Dima, before we let you go, I want to ask you about the Rafa Benitez to Real Madrid storyline. I saw a great tweet by Ryan Babel this week when it first broke. He says, oh, Rafa to Real Madrid, great. I hope Ronaldo doesn't mind being turned into a defender. listen, I'm a Rafa Benitez fan. I think he's a great coach wherever he goes. But is he a fit for a team with all that attacking talent?
I don't know. It's a big question. I would have had similar reservations, and I would have had similar thoughts to what, you know, Babel was the guy who went out and said it, but a lot of people are thinking that he is going to have to change. He's been put to him a few times by the Spanish journalists who had already gone over to Napoli last week to be at all his press conferences, and he says he's not a defensive coach. That's an image that people have in Spain, and I guess people have him in England as well, but he just uses the players that he has at his disposal, the best, the most pragmatic system that he has to suit the squad that he has. He does seem to be quite a micromanager. You know, he tells all the players what to do, gives them all individuals. And even at Liverpool and at Chelsea, that didn't go down so well with some of the players. You do have a lot of attacking Galacticos types to fit into the team. You know, even with Ancelotti, he had to have guys like James and Isco playing more defensive roles. We were just wondering who's going to be the kind of Dirk Kuyt figure in the Madrid team next season, who's going to be willing to muck in and do that type of a role as a striker. Maybe Rafa will surprise us all, and maybe he will play some beautiful flowing football and have the team knocking it around and have Ronaldo and all enjoying themselves and having fun up front. It's going to be really interesting to watch and see who he signs. You know, he's had his conversations, or he will be having his conversations with Florentino Perez, the Madrid president, about potential targets. Your typical Rafa Benitez signing is not the same as your typical Florentino Perez signing. I think that's fair enough to say. So we keep an eye on who the players are that they get, maybe who the players are that they try to move on. So, yeah, it's going to be hugely interesting to watch. The Bernabeu is not a place where, you know, you 1-0 up against Getafe at home and you take off a striker to put on another defender to see out the result. That just wouldn't go down well at the Bernabeu. Even if you do hold on for 1-0, there will be whistles, there will be people unhappy with that. So it's another thing, but he knows that himself. He's been through the club as a player and as a youth coach, so he knows who he's coming into. Maybe he will change and adapt to it. But as I say, it's going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds.
Maybe Dirk Cout could be the Dirk Cout type player he's after.
There you go.
That'd be a brilliant signing,
That'd
wouldn't
be
it?
Awesome.
I'd love that. Dermot, as always, great job. Enjoy the game this weekend, and thank you so much.
Cheers, fans. Cheers, and talk to you again.
Cheers.
That is Dermot Corrigan. Please follow Dermot on Twitter, at Dermot Corrigan. He is outstanding. He really is. Few know Spanish football better than Dermot. And yeah, Rafa to Real Madrid, man. It's not confirmed yet, but it looks like it's going to happen.
What did you make? I mean, why, with all due respect to Rafa, why would you replace Carlo Ancelotti with Rafa Benitez? Like, I don't understand.
I haven't got
this
a clue.
All.
I haven't got a clue. Like, it makes no sense. Carlo Ancelotti has been let go from more clubs for no reason.
I know.
Than any other manager in the history.
Chelsea
managers.
Being the last.
Like, absolutely. Like, you get a double. Nah, it's not really working out. It's time to leave.
Like, what was the issue here with Ancelotti?
I mean, no trophies, I guess, is an issue.
Well,
but I mean, look at what you're up against. I mean, you're telling me that any other manager in world football could have derailed Barcelona this year? No. No chance. You won the Decima last year. What do you want? You got Ronaldo, your star man,
right,
the face of the team, having a greatest career of his, a greatest season of his career,
right,
from a goal scoring standpoint. You got James Rodriguez, you know, adapting seamlessly to a new league. What do you want, man? I just don't get Real Madrid, when they do fail, I smile for that reason.
Because of stuff like this,
exactly.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'm not sure what. Well, I know what the reasoning is, but I mean, I think it's just very short-sighted from Real Madrid to sort of cast one of the best club managers in the modern era of football aside because he didn't claim a trophy.
Yeah,
in a season where Barcelona has been lights out and is on the cusp of like winning the treble, so it's, you know, it's absurd.
It is, and I mean, who else is out there right now? Well, Klopp's taking a year off.
Yeah,
so he says now. Ancelotti taking a year off now. He says.
Oh, has he said that?
Well, he said before if he's not going to return, he needs back surgery.
Oh, okay.
And he might take a year off, but of course that could change. I'm sure big clubs have big money.
Maybe
if you're Man City,
yeah,
you go for Ancelotti. I would.
Oh, I would absolutely, sure, no doubt.
He won't underachieve. That's for sure.
No,
I don't know.
Maybe he takes the year off and he spends because his wife is Canadian from Vancouver, right. So maybe he spends some time in Vancouver. Wouldn't that be something?
Maybe. Uh-oh, Robbo.
Robbo, better be
Robbo,
careful.
Look over your shoulder there, pal. FA Cup final. It's been a good year for your teams. You know, Juve is obviously superb and Arsenal, kind of your English favourite.
Yes.
In the FA Cup final. Turned it around late in the season as well, domestically. But, man, it was boys against men. I do feel sorry for Aston Villa, but that was Arsenal at the very, very best. And if only they could do that for 38 games of a year, they might be contending for a championship.
Well, yeah. One thing to do it in an FA Cup final against Aston Villa, with all due respect. Quite another to do it consistently in the league. But you're quite right, James. They showed quite well. And if they can sort of put together that type of form consistently in the Premier League, then, and what they did towards the back half of the season, then I think it's not unreasonable to suggest they can contend for the title next year. I still think they're probably one or two players away. But my God, Alexis Sanchez and Santi Cazorla. I thought they were fabulous players.
Brilliant, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was.
I think he's the most underrated player in England.
I think you might be right. I'm not sure why he's doesn't quite get his due. Maybe because, kind of like Rakitic, he's kind of one of those guys that just kind of floats under the radar and he doesn't really do a lot of spectacular things.
Sits deep, you know.
Yeah.
Is allowed to push forward, especially with Coquelin beside him now.
Right.
When he wants to. But he's just, he just does all the kind of the hard work and lets the so-called flair players benefit, but he can be a flair player as well.
He can. He's very good on the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, very,
two-footed.
Very good. Exactly.
Superb. His passing, moving, it's great. And I thought in that first half especially, he was the best player in the field.
Oh, by and large. Yeah. No question about it.
Superb.
So, I mean, it was good for Arsenal. Good for Wenger, I suspect. I mean, I suspect that this will be another, you know, thing that'll sort of keep him aboard for another year. So
yeah.
I think the real test will be next year because
you got to contend for a championship or something, right? You have to.
I mean, the sense that I've talked to other Arsenal supporters is like, yeah, this was great winning back-to-back FA Cups, long overdue after the 9-year title drought or whatever it was, but we want to win the league, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
At some point, they're going to have to really sort of go for it and make that happen.
It was a great occasion though. I mean, I love the FA Cup, you know that, and we covered it here in Sportsnet, but I've always loved it, and it felt like it recaptured something on Saturday. I know back in England, the BBC covered it for like 9 hours that day. Haven't done that for a while. Mm. Used to be that way back in the day.
Right.
And you saw the celebrations post-match. It meant a lot to the players.
It did. It was nice to see all that too in the wake of, in the aftermath of all the FIFA scandal. So to be sort of reminded of why we love this sport so much after what was, you know, admittedly a pretty dark week for the game.
After Sepp Blatter defecated on the game, you mean?
Yeah. Well, to put it mildly, sure. I think that was, you know, it was nice to see the FA Cup, as I said, to remind us why, you know, for my money, it's still the greatest sport in the world.
In many ways also, I mean, not only did that FIFA scandal overshadow the good in the game, it also overshadowed a humbling anniversary.
Yes, yeah, it did.
On Friday, right. Of Heysel, 30 years since Heysel disaster.
Where were you? Do you remember?
I was at home. I remember watching it on, I think it was on ITV back in those days, and, you know, watching the game, like the news wasn't out yet, really. It just slowly filtered down. I mean, how they even played that game, I don't know. I mean, the official story was, well, we were so concerned about continued violence if we stopped the game.
Right.
That's the reason. That's weak. That is weak.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I mean, how, I think
39
so.
People die.
Yeah.
And you still play the game that day?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's if to have that concern, okay, fine. I get that, maybe, but it's pretty crass to play a game of football after 39 people lost their lives and more than 600 were injured. So it was...
I mean, if you're not aware of what happened, essentially rampaging Liverpool fans broke down a fence.
Yes.
Crushed into a neutral area, right, which was many Juventus fans, who then ran the other direction over a wall. The wall collapsed.
Right.
39 people, mainly Juve fans, died. This was in the Heysel Stadium in Brussels in 1985.
Five, yeah.
European Cup final. Juventus against Liverpool. It wasn't policed properly.
No.
By all reports, the stadium itself.
It shouldn't have been held there to begin with. Yeah. It was a crumbling stadium.
An old crumbling stadium. A lot of issues there. Even the captains of the teams addressed the fans.
That's right.
Right.
I remember.
Saying, please stop this. I mean, can you imagine that nowadays?
Yeah. I remember vividly. My mom, God bless her, who's passed on since then, but she wrote me a note to get me out of school so I could come home and watch the game.
That's a good mom.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I would never do that.
Yeah, Mr. Dooley kind of looked at my notes somewhat suspiciously.
It was like, it's like misspellings, right, you know, cat, yeah, yeah. Chicken scratch.
No, it was
are you sure you didn't write this, John?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and I remember just watching sort of the terror and the violence and, you know, the deaths unfold. And, you know, I forget who was Liverpool captain at the time. Would it have been?
Phil Neal.
Phil Neal. Yep. He kind of came out, and then Gaetano Scirea for Juventus kind of came out and they pleaded with you know, the crowd to settle down. But it was a surreal moment. It really was. I mean, I had never seen anything like that. And I don't want to compare the two because they're completely different incidents. But for, I think, Italian fans, this is very much our Hillsborough.
Yeah,
this was sort of the, you know, the thing where it really sort of just brought everything home. And this was the one thing that we always remember. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible incident. There was lots of blame to go around. The way it was handled in the aftermath and the ensuing years by both teams, frankly, both by Juventus and Liverpool, was appalling. You know, it was certainly something I'll never forget.
Well, the way we honor tragedies in football, we honor the fallen at Hillsborough. We honor the fallen in the Munich air disaster.
Yes.
Heysel is always under the radar.
It has been.
I've always been very uneasy about that.
I have been too.
It's no less tragic.
Yeah, I mean, and as I said, even in Italy, it's only been until really the last 10 years that Juventus has really sort of acknowledged it and recognized it. And now they do a fairly good job. And then Liverpool, yeah, I mean, it was kind of always a taboo subject. And I guess, you know, look, it wasn't their proudest moment, right? So
hooliganism.
I mean, yeah.
It's as simple as that, right? Right in the dark, dark days of hooliganism.
Right.
You know, that was when English fans on a monthly basis would go overseas and cause trouble.
Yeah.
And they caused trouble that day, and as a result of that, not directly, but essentially it was, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Right? You know, all these deaths.
Yeah.
English football was changed forever that day because UEFA banned them from European competition for 5 years.
Right.
I think three more for Liverpool, which meant that after a few years of losing all that money and falling behind European football because you're not competing on the biggest stage,
mm-hmm.
that's when the Premier League was born. At the same time as Sky TV was invented, so that... I think, who is it, Rogan Taylor mentioned this great equation. It's Heysel plus satellite TV equals the Premier League.
Right.
And the rest is history. You know, the most successful league in world football, mm-hmm. was born successful from a money standpoint,
sure.
not perhaps from a footballing standpoint, but still the most watched league in the world. Mm-hmm. It came from that day.
Yeah, very much born out of that. Again, it was just a very much a sad day. And as a young boy watching it on live television in Canada with my brothers, it was, yeah. you know, just really sickening to watch unfold. It was, as I said, something I'll never forget. And obviously, as a longtime Juventus supporter, it's something that's, you know, registered with me. And I'll always remember that dark day.
Well, two happier days.
Yes,
involving
hopefully.
Juventus.
Hopefully.
This weekend, of course. We've gone through Barcelona. Let's now get to the Bianco e Neri. So let's head to Turin, shall we, J-Mo? And a man that attended the Juventus Media Day today, Adam Digby, joins us. Adam, how was Media Day? Was anything said of importance?
It was quite busy. There was quite a few people. Obviously, a lot of talk with Pogba about a possible transfer, which he played down very, very quickly. And he was eager to say that he'd learnt from Allegri's comments at the weekend, where he was criticised for over-elaborating and showboating a little bit in the draw with Hellas.
Right, right. Well, listen, we've got to get to the major point here, and this is what everyone's talking about, of course. You know, how does Juventus stop that Barcelona front three from scoring? I'm assuming Chiellini and Bonucci and company were asked that question today. So how will they stop those three?
To be honest, I think it's going to be more of a team effort than anything. It's not, you can't really leave it to a one-on-one matchup. And Gigi Buffon said today that Messi's an extraterrestrial and everybody else is just a normal human being. So it's going to take quite a few of those human beings to stop Messi and Neymar and Suarez too, I think.
Is there a one-on-one matchup in particular, Adam, that you're looking forward to watching or think that'll be sort of the key to victory in this one?
To be honest, I think the final, from a Juve perspective at least, is going to be decided at the other end of the pitches. We've seen in a lot of these big matches before with Conte when it was 3-5-2 that Juve can look sort of stale in possession and not really have any way of breaking down opponents. But we've seen this season with the change to the 4-3 and then we'll see, as Allegri calls it. Juve are a lot better in that regard, and they attack very swiftly, but not looking to play on the counter as a traditional Italian side. They win the ball back quickly with the likes of Vidal and Pogba and Tevez. Obviously, his work rate is very well known. And then transition quickly into attack. And I think they can catch Barcelona out. They don't like that. And obviously, they're going to have to do that because you bet that Barcelona over the 90 minutes are going to score.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, this Juve team, they are so balanced, it seems, that, you know, from the front to the back, with those players you mentioned. But you know, with this great campaign comes lots of transfer rumours. Vidal's mentioned, I think even someone asked Wenger about Vidal on the weekend, that there's rumours that Sami Khedira could be coming in. Does that mean that Vidal's gone? You mentioned Pogba earlier. Is there any sense of distraction for this team, or are they very much focused on the job at hand?
No, they seem very, very focused over the past few weeks, even as obviously the league title was sealed at the beginning of in the very first game in May. So they've had four or five league games that have really counted for nothing. But they still managed to rack up wins against Inter and Napoli, who were both chasing objectives, and Juve obviously playing a largely second team against those two sides, which is hugely impressive. And again, it's allowed Allegri to rest players and get them ready for this final, which this fully seems certain to be. The transfer talk, I think it's, as John will attest, in the past when Juve have been very, very good, they always move to improve the team, no matter how successful they were. And I think that's what you're seeing now. When you look at like the likes of Sami Khedira, who the club have confirmed they're very close to signing, and Paulo Dybala, who's been in Turin and had a medical, so that one seems to be sealed as well. And they're two quality additions, and you would imagine that even if nobody leaves, they come in and bump everybody else down a place in the pecking order, and that just reinforces the belief that this Juventus are really set to dominate Serie A, at least for a very long time to come.
It's a good point, because the Juventus has never really been a team to rest on its laurels. It's always sort of looking to add pieces and, you know, always sort of seeing not just a 2-year plan, but a 5-year plan. And even when they sell players at a high price, they usually, more times than not, invest that money back into the team. Adam, Max Allegri is an interesting story, because when he was hired, there were a lot of people upset about this, not thinking that he was up to the job, that he wasn't the standard of that Juventus should be going for in a manager. I hold up my hand. I was quite skeptical of this as well. He's managed to get this team within 90 minutes away from securing a triple. What's been your take on Allegri, and what's been the key to his success this season?
Just like yourself, I sat in a pub in England on the 16th of July when Allegri was appointed, and I was sat with a Juventino friend of mine, and we both just sat there almost in silence, with the only words exchanged between us were, why? because we couldn't understand or explain why Juve had gone for Allegri, and nothing seemed to indicate that we were in for a season like this. There was a lot of talk about Roma would be able to catch Juve because they'd beaten Juve to signings like Juan Iturbe, and they were very good last season until the title was mathematically lost, and then they fell away a little bit, which meant a bigger gap than was genuinely there. And he's just been incredible. Like, every decision he's made has been the right decision. He waited until the right moment to change the team and make it his own. He's rested players when he felt it was needed, which is something that Conte maybe was guilty of not doing. His tactics seem much more suited to Europe. And I think if you're looking for, like, the one thing that he's done that's made such a difference, I think it's really the intelligence that he's shown and the willingness to change. He came in wanting to play 4-3-3, quickly realised that wasn't possible and went back to 3-5-2 before he eventually made the change to a back four. His fallout with, well, not fallout, but his decision over the decision to get Pirlo to leave Milan back in 2011 was very well publicised. Pirlo discussed it in his own book. And he's obviously looked at what Pirlo's done since he's got to Juve and recognised that he was wrong. And Pirlo has obviously done the same thing. And it's just that willingness to admit mistakes and to make a difference. And I think the other thing, sorry to ramble on a little bit, but I think the other thing that's massive about Allegri aiming a difference to Antonio Conte is Antonio Conte was just, trying to think of a kind word, relentless in his pursuit of victory. You would see him on the sideline with Juventus 3-0 up with a minute to go, and he would scream about the side conceding a throw-in. And you think after 3 years, that's got to wear a little thin on those players. And I think the change of voice and the fact that Allegri, especially in recent weeks when the title's been sealed, like the loss to Parma, he's accepted that as long as the players delivered when it mattered, and they've rewarded him with really, really seriously improved performances and impressive performances when he sent them out in the Champions League after those games. And you can't ask for anything else. He's given them a longer leash than they ever had under Antonio Conte, and he's been rewarded with the trust of the players.
It's been obviously a challenging number of years for Italian football and Italian Serie A, and you know they obviously, this is a nation that needs to have a super club amongst the European elite, and Juve are close to that, if not there already. But domestically, are people hoping for a Juve win here, or is it like, you know, I know in England, for example, you know, if you're not a United fan, for example, over recent years, you're not supporting a United, you know, on the biggest stage. Are teams, perhaps outside of Inter Milan fans, you know, rooting for Juventus on Saturday?
I think when you travel abroad and you have the large Italian diaspora, like, you know yourselves in Toronto, I think that's a little bit more prevalent. But I think in Italy still, it's very much tribal, and it's like the anyone but United thing. It's like that with Juventus. It's, you either support Juve or you hate Juve. There's no real middle ground in Italy. And that's certainly the case. But as I say, spending time in England and yourselves in Toronto, you will see that fans of other Italian clubs do want Juve to win because they support their Italian teams. But yeah, that's definitely not the case here.
Carlos Tevez, obviously a fantastic campaign. He's done so well since coming over from Manchester City. What's been your evaluation of him during his time in Juventus, and does he have a future with the club beyond, you know, what's his future with the club, do you think? Because there's all these rumors about him, you know, going back to Boca.
Yeah, I think he clearly wants to go back to Boca Juniors. Whether that'll be this summer, I don't think anybody really knows. I think, if I'm honest, looking at it with no sort of insider knowledge or anything, but only just my personal opinion, I think if Juve were to do the unthinkable in Berlin, I could see that he would choose that as the time to walk away on top from European football for sure. Tevez has been phenomenal, and I think he really doesn't get enough credit. I think, as I alluded to earlier, it's easy to look at him and say, look how hard he works for the team, and he's always running and chasing the ball, and he's relentless with defenders. But that really does a disservice to his overall quality. And I think when you're talking about the best players in Europe, Carlos Tevez at Juventus certainly deserves to be in that conversation. He's a leader on the pitch. He's a fantastic goal scorer. He's devastating in possession when he's running at defenders. The hashtag thing Tevez could dribble was a phenomenon across Twitter and stuff for all those reasons earlier this season. And he really is a fantastically gifted player who really is so often overlooked.
If Juventus pulls this off on Saturday, Adam, it would mark the end of an amazing 9-year journey. When we think back to 2006, when the team was relegated to Serie B, the Calciopoli scandal, winning promotion back to Serie A, there's been some 7th place finishes there. They've gone through some managers. They've, you know, really sort of hit the heights under Conte. Now they're 90 minutes away from winning their 3rd European crown. When the Calciopoli scandal hit in 2006 and Juventus was relegated, there was a lot of people around the world writing, an obit on Juventus, saying this is it, that they're done, that they can't possibly come back from this. What's been sort of your take on sort of this amazing journey that they've taken from, you know, Serie B to potential European champions?
It's really strange because you look at it and you think that's phenomenal to do that in 9 years. But then you look a little bit closer and scratch the surface. And yes, they won promotion back to Serie A the first time of asking, and then they finished second place that first year under Claudio Ranieri, and everything looked good. But I think that's the one time, as we were mentioning at the top of the show about Juventus resting on their laurels, I think that's the one time they were a little bit guilty of that. And the club management who took over when their board resigned in 2006 did a fantastic job of restructuring the club's finances and making sure they were able to continue and preventing exactly what you say about the obituaries that were being written for Juve. They prevented that. But I think then they were a little bit guilty for a good number of years of just resting on what they had and depending on guys like Nedved and Del Piero and Buffon to just carry them. And they were not capable of that. And you look at what happened when Antonio Conte came. And that was 2011. So those 2 7th place finishes, and probably the season before that as well, Juve really struggled. So that's 3 years that they've lost in that time before they were able to come back and compete. And when Andrea Agnelli took over in 2010, he discussed at length a 5-year plan to get back to the top of Serie A. And when you think of what they've actually achieved in that 5 years, 4 Serie A titles, the Coppa Italia, and as you say, a place in the Champions League final, that's phenomenal progress. But I think you definitely have to look back and reflect on a few lost years and some gross mismanagement under that time, which is quite scary when you think of the whole time scale.
Adam, I know you are an objective journalist, but I know you just love your Bianconeri. You love Juve. Good luck this weekend, mate. Try to enjoy the match. That's all I can ask. Try to enjoy the match.
I'll certainly try. Thank you, guys.
That's Adam Digby. You can follow Adam on Twitter at adsadz77. Yes, J-Mo, you also are, you know, you're a man of integrity. You're a professional journalist, but you also love your Juventus.
Oh.
Will you enjoy the game, or are you a type of guy that will be just cacking himself the entire 90
minutes? No, it'll be the latter, James. It's, no, honestly, it really is. I wish, because I've been in situations like this before where, you know, it's my team playing in a final. Well, I think the last time was in 2006 when, you know, Italy was playing France in the World Cup final. I struggle to enjoy it. I'm just a nervous wreck. It means so much to me that just with every kick of the ball, I'm just like, I can't even describe it. I'm just a nervous wreck. I can't enjoy it. And it's sad because I should enjoy it, right? Because I'm a fan and this means everything in the world to me. I certainly enjoy everything afterwards. Like, as soon as the final whistle blows, then it's a, Then I can hopefully relax and I can celebrate, hopefully. But during the 90 minutes, or if it goes to penalties or whatever, I'll be absolutely just a nervous wreck.
It's like me at World Cups. What was that way? I never really enjoy it. I mean, thankfully, I'm usually not enjoying it, you know, for the first couple of weeks, and then right. I can move on.
I was going to say.
But, you know, England can be playing, you know, against, you know, Montserrat. Right. And I'm still like, oh, God, this is awful.
I'm the same way.
I hate it. I can't stand it.
I will say this. The one, I mean, obviously I want to see Juventus win. That's goes without question. The one person who I'd really like to see win, though, is Gianluigi Buffon, because I think he's been a fantastic servant for Juventus. Think about this, too. After the 2006 World Cup, he was at the height, right? Like, he had Real Madrid, Manchester United. There were a lot of clubs.
He chose Serie B.
This was the year where he was coming off a fantastic World Cup. He ended up finishing, I think, second or third in the Ballon d'Or voting. Could have had his pick to go anywhere he wanted in the world, in world football. Stuck with Juventus, where guys like Patrick Vieira, Ibrahimovic, Cannavaro, Zambrotta, Emerson, there was a lot of others who fled. Turan was another one, yes. Yeah. Del Piero, Nedved, Trezeguet, but Buffon was the key, because he was such, you know, he was the best goalkeeper in the world. He stayed for a season in Serie B, in second division football, and then, now he's so close to winning it for the first time. So, I mean, if anyone is sort of deserving who hasn't won it, I think he is. So, I mean, I hope he does.
Well, if they do win, he is going to be key to that, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
Because,
yeah.
You know, like Adam said, Barca are going to score.
Yeah.
The question is how many?
Yes. Well, and you know what? I mean, if this were like the two-legged semifinal, I wouldn't give Juventus much chance, but it's a one-game final.
Sure.
And anything can happen. And I'm going to write about this later on for Sportsnet.ca this week. I think back to the 1994 Champions League final, when Barcelona, with a great dream team of Stoichkov and Romario, were playing AC Milan. And Cruyff was talking all kinds of smack about, we're going to destroy Milan and they don't stand a chance. And Barcelona were the overwhelming favorites. And they were missing Baresi and some other people through injury and suspension. Milan ended up winning 4-0. Now, I'm not saying Juventus is going to beat.
No, that's what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's exactly what you're saying.
It just shows that anything can happen in a one game, and I don't think it's that far-fetched to suggest that Juventus has a chance of winning.
It's not a gimme. This is not a gimme for Barcelona. This is an excellent matchup.
Right.
And it's a fantastic match, and I'm really happy these two made it to the final, because they do offer such different comparisons.
Well, I don't think Barcelona has really had to face a team like Juventus en route to the final.
No.
You know, one that is just so well defensively organized and can kind of soak up that pressure and really thwart and stifle teams. So this is going to be a good test for them. And it's a good test for Juventus as well, because they haven't had to face attacking threat like Barcelona. Sure. So it should be a good final.
When I look back at Juve's, you know, Champions League, the way they just toyed with Borussia Dortmund stands out to me.
Yeah.
Now, I know this Dortmund this year was not the same Dortmund of previous years, but it's still Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League, a competition where it's very comfortable. And Juve just bossed.
Yeah, very
bossed
much so.
Dortmund, right?
Yeah.
So, obviously, Dortmund, Barca, different beasts. But Juve is, for me, amongst the elite, once again, of world football. And it could be broken up this summer.
Could be.
You know, because some key players leaving. So, this might be the last hurrah with this group. I think it's going to be quite the hurrah, but I still say Barcelona are going to win it.
I would think so. I mean, I'm being totally objective. I think Barcelona is going to win, but I hold out hope.
All right. Well, listen, we're down to the final week of the European season, but then of course we've got Euro qualifiers next week.
Yes.
Never ends. It never ends. And Women's World Cup, of course, kicks off on Saturday as well.
Yeah.
TFC, we're going to be there. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend, actually, for
football
fans.
World Cup qualifying for the men, Canadian men, too.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Because they got to play the two-game playoff against Dominica this month.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, and Benito is going to be announcing the squad today.
Tomorrow?
Okay.
Yeah, on Tuesday.
Especially this game down. Any surprises you expect?
There are, yeah. I've actually seen the roster. I was given an advanced copy. So
surprises?
I was sworn. Good surprises, like pleasant surprises.
Not Junior Hoylett.
I was sworn to secrecy, so I'm not going to comment on any sort of.
I have heard nothing.
Yeah.
Just so you know, nothing. If I think of what could really be a pleasant surprise of Canada, and I think of one name, Junior Hoylett, even though he's coming off an awful season.
There's going to be one or two pleasant surprises tomorrow. That's all I'll
really?
Say. Yep.
Leo Messi?
I can firmly deny. I will go on the record and say no.
All right. Well, exciting. Exciting. Yeah. Wow. It's not John de Guzman. We know that.
No.
All right. Well, there you have it. Excellent.
You'll just have to wait until tomorrow.
And check out sportsnet.ca because I'm sure the second we can actually talk about it, JMO will.
Yeah.
All right.
The other thing, too, is obviously the Champions League final goes on Saturday on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World. And we're going to have in-depth coverage on the website every day this week. We got like three to four pieces of original content like every day leading up to the final. So it should be good stuff. So check us out at the website for all the good stuff.
All right. Excellent. JMO, thank you so much. Our thanks to Dermot Corrigan and Adam Digby, of course, and Brent behind the glass there. Thanks, Brent. Great job, pal. Excellent. I'm James Sharman. Cheers for listening.